Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to our 14th episode of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nesloni. On Twitter, you can find me at TechNinjaTodd.
My name is Chris Kessler. You can find me at IamKessler. Kessler has one S in there.
And today, we are very excited to have our special guest, Shelley Terrell, with us. She is an education force to be reckoned with. She hosts free Friday webinars, is a social media community manager for the Consultants E, has co-founded EdChat and the Reform Symposium e-conference, which is seen by thousands of people from over 100 different countries. She's been recognized by the New York Times, Microsoft's Heroes for Education, and the BAMI Awards. And in addition to her awards, she's also a world-traveling speaker and an author of a new book coming out soon called The 30 Goals Challenge for Educators. So, Shelley, you want to go ahead and say hey and give us your Twitter handle?
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us. And my Twitter handle is Shell Terrell, or sometimes it rhymes, Shell Terrell.
Shell Terrell. All right, let's get going. We always like to start with a little bit of background on how you ended up in the field of education. If you kind of just talk us through that, and then we'll get into what you're doing now.
Okay. Well, actually, I didn't want to be a teacher. I recently wrote a post about this, how I would see all the work that teachers did and how much they gave to the profession, and my favorite teachers would give the most and they would not be respected and they wouldn't get any support from the principal. So when I was younger, I thought, that's not what I want to do. That's not what I'm going to do. So then I went to a visit magnet school, and it was one of the first magnet schools in San Antonio at the time. And when I went there, I was kind of geared to do public speaking and to be this huge business guru or something. I was mentored by like Hispanic Chamber of Commerce and stuff, so it was a big deal, you know. And I started being a business major, and then I was at the time also in my church, and they needed people to take over our children's church. And we had 100 kids, and it was an inner city church. All their parents had something. So they were either in ex-addicts, or they were gang members, or recovering addicts, or in halfway houses. So we had all 100 kids in one room, and the teacher couldn't do it anymore. So my sister and I decided we'd do it. We just said we're going to do it. And we had 100 kids, and we did have we had a curriculum, we had a book, and for an hour we had to try and make these kids' lives much better than what they faced at home. And so I learned teaching that way. We got into it, and they saw we struggled, so they gave us puppetry lessons. They gave us lessons in doing pantomime, and I learned all these incredible things that are really great for kids to engage them. I learned how to handle when kids literally do cartwheels around you the whole hour and you have 100 kids. And so that's when I saw what a difference it made, and at the end of the day, you have kids who just come up to you and give you hugs, and then you just feel it's worth it. So then I decided, I still didn't decide I was going to be a full-blown teacher, but I continued to do things like that, and eventually I just said, wow, I ended up getting my master's in teaching, and then I just decided, go for it.
Yeah, cool.
So what did you teach when you were a teacher?
I've taught different subjects. I started when I was at a museum school, so we had a hands-on science curriculum, and so I started teaching natural history, hands-on science, anything to do with also world history, things like that. And then when I finished from there, I ended up teaching ESL. In the States, we call it ESL. And I had 8 different topics, because in the U.S., which is very different because I also taught in Germany and Greece for a while, and it's different because there you have classes and your whole class is ESL. That's what they go for. They learn English with you. And English is pretty much like the topic. But in the U.S., well, at least in Texas, it's ESL history, ESL math, so I had to teach them all of that. And so I've actually taught anything from world religions, health, math, everything, I think.
Well, now you travel all over the world, you present, you do trainings for teachers. How did all that come about from being in education to moving into that?
When I was teaching in Germany, it was very different than when I was teaching in the U.S. I was teaching high school students at my last job in San Antonio, and I loved my job. I loved it. And we had it was a unique kind of situation because we had this organization in their incarnate word, and they own a graduate program, they own high school, they even own elementary, so they have all branches, and I worked for all of those branches, so I got to teach all of those students. And when it was huge, I had 70, 80 students that I was working with, and then I went to Germany, and our staff was about 5 to 10. We didn't have regular meetings. It was very different. In Germany, you tend to go from, you don't have a set classroom. The teacher tends to travel. And so you don't get that kind of same feel. You also don't have extracurricular activity. You don't have cheerleaders. You don't have football. You don't have anything like that. And so when I was teaching there, I felt like I missed it. I felt I had such a great staff that worked with me, and I missed that. I missed having this huge staff that would just, we would work together, and it was all about getting the students to succeed and all go to college. I think we had like a 99% college attendance rate. And then I went to Germany, and I worked with young learners and all kinds of groups, but I just felt alone, like it was just me. So I decided, and I would host workshops, wiki workshops, and one or two teachers would attend. and so I joined Twitter. My sister said, they were in New York. I really missed my family at the time, too. And they said, well, let's do this thing called Twitter. You can talk to us all the time. And I said, okay. But then I didn't really get it. I was like, oh, this is dumb. So I got off of it. And then 3 months later, I was actually at the training in Germany, and the teacher said, hey, are you on Twitter? And I said, yes. And they said, well, you know, why don't you tweet? And I said, maybe I should tweet with teachers. And that's where it started. Then after that, I kept just sharing things and running projects, and I got so excited and blogged right away, and people just joined my projects, and that's and then we come here.
So how many years ago was that?
That's about 4 years ago.
4 years ago, okay. So is there someone out there that maybe inspired you to do what you're doing now, to get you out of the classroom to kind of do what you're doing now, where you're working with more teachers and educators rather than students?
I think, well, this is something that I used to do with I would say the teachers that were at my school. I actually wrote in the high school, the incarnate word, and I wrote for one of the teachers that I met in Germany. Her name is Karen Sylvester. I wrote a piece where I talked about this person that was my mentor, and her name was Sister Luz. And she was fantastic, and she really kind of spurred me to do this, because when I was teaching, that was kind of my first official teaching job. It wasn't just one of these teaching projects that I had and ended up doing for nonprofit or organization. It was at a school with a curriculum and grades, and I was very hesitant. I wasn't trained like, okay, most teachers follow a pattern where they go to the training program and then they teach. So they have all of these understandings of what is supposed to happen. But when I went into teaching, I didn't have any of that because I didn't have the formal training. And I thought that I was just, I didn't do things right. I thought that I was going against the rules, and I would shy away. I wouldn't even talk to any of the other teachers, and I would have my students. We would all sit in pillows and things like that and across the floor, and they would listen to the iPods, and they could bring in what they wanted. And then when the principal would come around, they knew they had to run to the desk and raise their hand, and I would say something very smart on a podium. And we had this down. They knew, you know, they wouldn't get these things if I didn't get to. And so Sister Luz came up to me one year and she said, you know, your students, I really love your students. They're doing well, except they're not interacting with everybody else. And some of the students got really depressed. They came from other countries. They stayed in our boarding program. And they didn't interact. And I did notice that. And so that I understood when I thought about it, I said, yeah, I'm doing a really great thing. I'm a great teacher. But by not connecting with the other teachers in my school, I'm doing a disservice because my students think they can hide, they can join me for lunch, they can do all these things, and they think they don't have to, you know, really get the full experience of being here. And so she told me we're going to do this program together, and ever since she did that, and she kind of pulled me out, and I got to meet the other teachers and really develop relationships with them, I learned that that's what you have to do. You have to reach out and you have to come to an understanding. Some of the teachers that I would talk to that had my students when they weren't with me, but they were in regular classes as well, the general curriculum, I mean, they would say things like, well, why should I teach my students? Why should I change my curriculum to cater to your students? And for them, I had to explain or show them the methods are the same. They're better for your students, too. They're better than lecturing. All students love to do digital projects or, you know, use videos. That's good to diversify the learning, much right. better than if they're taking notes with a PowerPoint. That's just and these were the conversations that we had to have and the understanding. So I think it was kind of natural when I got on Twitter and I saw all these people collaborating, and I thought, wow, we're just going to go, I'm just going to collaborate and I'm going to talk with them. And I was already geared for that from my previous experience.
Now, this leads well into the next question that we have, and that's, you know, if you were to give one piece of advice to a brand new teacher, what would be a piece of advice that you would give to them?
My piece of advice would be to, and it's kind of hard to explain, but every day we get the opportunity to be, and in just in general for people, we get the opportunity. We wake up, we have a choice. We can go into our classes and we can enjoy it. We can have those moments where we see that students' eyes are glowing or they're full of curiosity. And those are the moments that are really, really meaningful to be a teacher. And for us to put all this pressure, and I know it is a lot of pressure. We have other principal, you know, the principals and districts and policy and standardized testing and all of that thrown at us. And sometimes we get so lost in that that we sometimes make the decision, maybe unconsciously, to walk in the classroom and to not choose to take those moments where we can, where we just say kind of, and, you know, excuse my line, screw it all. You know, I'm going to have this moment with my kids. I'm going to have a moment with my students. And I think for teachers, a new teacher, my advice would be, if you keep doing that, you're going to hate your job anyway. You're going to have a lot of stress. It's going to be really terrible for your health. You're going to have a terrible situation when you get home because you're going to be stressed. You're going to take it out on everybody. So you might as well choose that if you're going to get in trouble anyway, you might as well choose to go in the classroom and love your job and every day, you know, go out saying, hey, I made a difference. I had fun. And if my test scores don't get so high, you know, at least my students walk out at the end of the day and they think that learning is fun. They want to continue. They're curious. They're passionate. And they're just not walking out dead. And, right. and so that would be my my advice.
So recently you've been working on a new book called The 30 Goals Challenge for Educator. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that is and what the book's going to be about?
Yes, and actually this is a program that I started back when I started blogging. I was blogging less than a year, and so what happened was 4 years ago, I got so excited. I was one, and this happens, I think, a lot to teachers where they get on social networks and they see how exciting, they meet teachers from all over, and they're like-minded and they're supportive, and I was so excited about that. So I started all these projects, and I didn't really I don't ever really think like most people. Like most people say, oh, if 8 people don't do this or 10 or 20 or 100, then it's a failure. But I don't see things like that. I think you change one life, it's a success. That's all that matters, just the one life. And right. So I started writing that I was going to accomplish 30 goals, and I told my I had been blogging, I think, just a few months, actually, less than 8 months. And I told the readers, which I had very few, and I told them, I said, well, you can do this with me. I'm going to do 30 goals, and if I don't reach 30 goals, then, oh, well, then I'll just... At least if I reach one, that's more than I accomplished last year, you know. And it was very surprising because others joined, and they actually did this crazy 30 goals with me within the year. And I decided it was just easiest if I published it as a PDF, because the blog doesn't work. So when people come on, they would say, oh, I missed this goal. And it was just really hard. So I put a free PDF of all the first cycle, and now it's the fourth cycle, and we have themes now. Now we do a more collaborative approach. They can choose what kind of goals they want from all the cycles. Now some of our members are proposing goals, and so it's kind of about this whole experience. And the reason behind the published book is that then we can get it to teachers who aren't connected. Now there's about over 10,000 who have joined since that first time, and that's all we do. We just accomplish 30 goals throughout the year, and they're short term. They're supposed to be something you can do within the day.
Okay, so what's one of your big goals right now?
Our big goals, well, one of them that just the last goal was thank a teacher or student. It was very simple.
Yeah,
that's good. I like that there's goals like that that are that easy to do, where you can still feel accomplished because you're still achieving your goal.
Yeah,
what an amazing thing if you were to just send an email to like some unsuspecting teacher, like maybe on the other part of the campus that wasn't expecting something from you. You know, just like a little paragraph about how awesome they are. I mean, how amazing would that person feel if you did something like that? That would just be awesome. Okay, so let's get into I guess we didn't talk about where you blog at. What is your blog?
You can go to two places. It's ShellyTerrell.com or TeacherRebootCamp.com.
Okay.
And it'll go to the same place.
All right, perfect. So you mentioned blogging, and that you personally went to a magnet school, correct? Did you write a lot at the magnet school? Have you always wanted to be a writer, or is it just something you kind of picked up and wanted to share your reflections, or how'd that happen?
That's actually a really good question. When I first started, even when I was younger, I've always written. I love writing. I love reading, and I love writing. And when I was younger, I would always be in a book, and I would always be writing. I was actually very closed off. I mean, I had friends later, but I'm more of a person who likes to be private and write all the time. And so I love writing. I've never written for... it's always been kind of nonfiction, and I've written novels and poetry and things like that, but I've never really written a blog, and for me it's really different. I think you really have to learn how to do that in a smart way, the purpose behind it, what's going to be your reasoning. And I learned a lot through Sue Waters. She's the edgy blogger. She's also going to be one of the keynotes at the Reform Symposium. But she is fantastic. I followed all her advice, and it really helped me, because a blog is more difficult. It's personal reflection. Mm-hmm. It's that time where you get to be honest in front of other teachers, and that can be pretty scary. And it can be pretty scary to just read about yourself, and when you're honest with yourself, then it can be scary.
Now, you've also, with the stuff that you've done, you've been recognized by some pretty notable entities, such as like the New York Times, Microsoft, the BAMIs. So my first question is what was the Times piece about?
The New York Times is about a chat.
Okay.
That's what we...
and then what is the Microsoft Heroes in Education Award?
What it is they actually talk to you. They do it's this long interview. They send you these questions. And then on top of that, you do a video so people can actually see the video as well. And then they just recognize different heroes in education. I was really excited to see this. It's Anthony Saucedo of Microsoft. And he's really great interviewer as well. I mean, he asks a lot of very hard, difficult questions. But he's had other people like Lisa Dabbs, I know, has been one of the people that they've recognized as well. And I think it's just something where they go and they see who's kind of making, doing these projects, and they notice them, and they give them this hero education recognition and do this. So it was really nice. It was a great experience.
Now that you're getting these recognitions and stuff, is it still kind of surreal to you that people are wanting to recognize you for things?
It is. It was very, the BAMI is one of these very personal things. This year I decided, and even a little bit last year, to step back a little as far as the awards went. Not because I'm anti-awards. It's because I feel like sometimes the same people always get recognized for the awards. So this year I made no efforts to say, oh, I was nominated for the EduBlog. Oh, it was this project. When in the past, when I was first year and things, I did. I would say, oh, you know, thank you, I've been nominated. And the reason I did that is because I really want other teachers and stuff to feel that. I want them to feel as if, and you need that sometimes, as you know, I wish that people can say you don't need awards and things like that. Well, our society is geared us for that, so I think recognizing a teacher and making them have that moment is a good thing. I know a lot will disagree. So this year, I actually went through kind of a depression, and I had some really tough personal things, and for about 6 months, I was traveling. I was actually in Croatia and working with students there, but I didn't blog much. I probably blogged once a month if I did that, and I just couldn't do it. I would look and I would say, oh, and it was real struggle for me to do a lot of things, and I just felt I couldn't produce, and it was a really scary feeling because you have all these projects you're in charge of, and you think, oh no, you got to do them, and then. It, all of a sudden, you know, somebody announced that they had the 5 for the BAMIs or whatever, and congratulations. And I looked, and it was so touching. It really is. And I keep telling people, it doesn't matter if I win or not, because that's not the point. The point is that I didn't even blog for, you know, 6 months really, or do as much tweeting or anything, and my PLN still nominated me and then still made me one of the top 5, and for me it was just incredible. I just thought that's for me, it's just very touching. So
sorry that Todd and I are smirking in the background here. we're updating our show notes as we go, and I'm putting a C in parentheses for Chris is going to ask the next question, but it keeps putting the stupid copyright symbol. So we're both laughing in the background here. But
no problem.
Anyway, you had mentioned EdChat earlier. Let's talk a little bit about EdChat. I know that every time I post something on Twitter, I always put the hashtag EdChat in it because I think that's the one that most teachers happen to follow. So just kind of talk about EdChat and when you guys have your chats and those kinds of things.
Well, EdChat is pretty much the baby of, well, Tom Whitby. When I first met Tom, Tom was this huge celebrity to me. And he would just kind of say these rantings, and then people would come and argue with him. And he DM'd me, and he's like, Shelly, this is overwhelming. I can't follow all these fights. I'm getting tag team here and there. And he's like, is there a way for me to be able, or for anybody actually, to be able to just have this? Can we just do it at a regular time? Everybody can join in, and we can. And I said, well, yeah, you can do it through a hashtag. And then we came up with EdChat. And so we came up with this platform every Tuesday, and we invite Stephen Anderson as well. And Stephen Anderson has been huge. And so it's all 3 of us that did this. We created, you know, the format, how it would go. Steve was like, okay, well, if we're going to do this, then you have to, and Steve is Web 20 Classroom, but he's like, if we're going to do this, you got to do it right. You got to have a poll. You have to have people contribute, and it has to be a collaborative effort. At the time, there were a few hashtags, but they were not they weren't getting the kind of stamina or anything of EdChat. And so when we put this up, Tom is also one of those people who is fearless. And one of the first guests we had was Alfie Cohn, because one of the topics that was voted and proposed was homework. And we, and so Tom's like, well, we have to get Alfie Cohn. And I said, I think Alfie Cohn's going to do it. And he's like, Shelly, well, if he says no, then he says no. But we just got to ask. And I thought, oh, okay, well, then you're right. And so sure enough, he said yes. And so we trended on Twitter that day. That was like 4 years ago, too. You were in, back then when you you were trending topic, that was huge.
It was a huge deal, yeah.
It's Justin Bieber or Lady Gaga. So to trend is just amazing. And ever since then, we have it every Tuesday. We have two chats. We have one at 12 o'clock New York time, or EST, and then we have one at 6 o'clock New York time, EST. And those, we have them to match people from Europe as well. The most voted upon topic, well, the topics go every Sunday. So if you follow EdChat, you can vote for it. You can even propose topics, although a lot of times Tom ends up proposing a lot of topics from conversations he has, because some people are hesitant to propose. But a lot of people do vote for the topics, and the first choice is at the 6 o'clock time, and the second choice is at the 12 o'clock. And so we have this every Tuesday. About, I don't know, 1,000 to 3,000 will join every Tuesday.
Wow.
and now, wow. Ever since EdChat, we've had over 1,000 Twitter chats from EdChat. So the latest one is EdChat DE that we just helped launch as well. A lot of times they'll ask us, you know, what's good advice and things. And so, yeah.
Do you archive those? Is there a service out there that will allow you to archive that a chat that big?
We have Jerry Swiatek. At Jay Swiatek, he does that. And okay. He used the archivist for a very long time. I don't know what he uses now, but he's an incredible tech guy as well. Jerry just knows everything. He really does. And so we do archive this, and we put this at the edchat.pbworks.com wiki, so you can find all the topics. You can go through the transcripts, even if you're not on Twitter, even if you're just online.
Cool. Now, you're also working on heading up your annual Reform Symposium Conference, which takes place here soon. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how it came to be?
Well, the Reform Symposium Conference, we were actually having a conversation on Twitter. And one of the things I do is I moderate. I don't moderate as much as I used to, but when we first started, I was moderating all the time. And so we would have these conversations. And one of the things that people would say when EdChat got big, anytime you do anything big, and this is a warning for you guys too, because you're going to have Arnie Duncan soon, you're going to get people who come up and say this and that. They're going to tell you everything wrong about what you're doing, or they're going to offer you all this advice. And at first, you know, I would get a little huffy puffy, and I would say, well, what are you doing? You know, Tom would say, Shelly, just don't, you know. But one of the things is, I started asking, because one of the things is they said, it's an echo chamber. And I don't think so. I don't believe in echo chambers, actually. I think that when people are in conversation and they constantly get seeds planted in their mind, that they're spurred to do something. It may not be all 3,000 teachers, but I can trust you, there's quite a few that actually go out and the next day they're pumped up and they actually do things because they're spurred by this conversation, because I do things spurred by the conversation. And one of the things, Chris Rogers and Kelly Tankley and Jason Bedell, we were all having this conversation, and they were saying how to go to a conference, and I think most teachers can get frustrated with this, is really frustrating. First of all, you don't make that much money as a teacher, and you're expected to pay a lot to go to a conference. You have to pay for the fees, you have to pay for the travel, and not only that, you have to pay to present. And some of the people that I would talk to that you are going to have, that you've had in the show, that Edu All Stars, would tell me these experiences where they'd go to this conference and two people would show up. Mm-hmm. To some really huge people that you would think, really? Like,
yeah.
And they would tell me, and it was so sad because they were just really upset by it. And I thought, why should any teacher have to go through this? They already go through enough. Teachers need to be celebrated. So we decided, and it was really kind of Chris Rogers and the Jason Bedell thing, and Kelly and I went on and we're just kind of like, we're going to do this. We don't just, you know, we're not going to just talk about it. We're going to go and we're going to make this happen. And so that's what we decided. We decided, wouldn't it be great to have a conference where all of our PLN could talk, all these people we get inspired by every day, and they could have a, you know, they have lots of people celebrate them, lots of people attend, thousands of people can go and download these, and nobody has to pay for it. You know, any teacher around the world, from Mexico, from Indonesia, from Jakarta, wherever, can come in, and they do. We have 3 days. It's a free online conference. As long as you have internet access, you just click on. It's a web. It's Illuminate Woomba Blackboard room. Well, it used to be Illuminate Woomba. Now it's Blackboard, and it comes up. And important part of this is the reason we were – this costs a lot of money. It's not like you can just run a free conference. It does cost money. But we have had the privilege of working with Steve Hargadon. And this year we're working with him very closely with the Future of Education, .com. Now we are the e-conference when we used to not be. But this year is our first step towards that. And Steve has been just fantastic. He's always given us the rooms. And so we are able to do this because of that. And so they can log in anywhere in the world. We have some teachers who will stay at an internet cafe for 3 days to catch every single presentation. So, and this year we have our opening plenary, Dr. Sugata Mitra. So it's not... We make an experience. We don't make it, it's a free conference because you can't go to one of these other conferences. No, we make our conference to, it is the experience. We have a looping violinist, Steve Bingham, who's going to play live looping. We have a film producer who had 8 million hits on YouTube. We ask people, we tell them our vision, and we really want to make sure that all teachers get this incredible experience and they get incredible professional development.
Now, is the conference recorded so people can access it later if they miss it, or is it a live-only event?
Yes, that's a great question. So if you did miss it, the last three conferences we've had, you can go back and you can watch those. They're all on iTunes as well. We have the recordings. You just click on the link and you can see really fabulous people in the past, like Steve Wheeler. We had Chuck Sandy, Principal L, George Kiros, Alec Kiros, Dr. Alec Kiros. So I mean, we've had some great people join.
So one of the common threads that we've seen with our guests is that not only are they all passionate about education, but they're really passionate about sharing with other people. Have you always felt that way, you know, in your career, that you're just passionate about sharing and collaborating with other people and just to get the word out there?
Yes, I believe when I was studied communication, that's what my main communication theory, and one of the things that I learned about was hybridization, and this was also kind of like a drama term, and when I thought, wow, that's really interesting how you can get, and it was back when, you know, we grew up with the internet just starting, you know, That's really phenomenal. Now all of this is, you know, this vision, I just never had this vision, but I learned, you know, this concept, and I thought, that's fantastic when you can get, hybridization is when you get, like, a telephone and a computer and my, you know, all these different technologies, and you blend them. They're just a hybrid, you know, and you have this whole new technology, which is kind of like our phone. It does everything.
Yeah.
But back then, you never had that, so I thought, I've always kind of carried this concept along in projects. If you have people who come together and one is really good at this, and that's the great thing about ArsCon. I don't do everything. You know, we have incredible people who do things. We just had Jake Duncan do this amazing QR code a badge for ArsCon. I think it's the first of its existence for any conference to have a badge that works as a QR code and a link, so that's very cool. But we've also had, like, Chris Rogers is going to do our video. In the past, we had Josh Stumpin' Horse, and he did rap videos for us. So we've always had people come who do really great, awesome things, and that's what I think makes these kind of projects very interesting and wonderful. One person did it. First of all, it's not going to succeed as well, I think. You know, you're just, if it just becomes all about one person, a person gets really overwhelmed, and it just, it's really difficult. The other part is, I think when you share, I don't understand when you don't want to share, because teachers produce so much. Every day we have to produce lesson plans. So we have so much material we already produce. We're creators. And if you don't give it away, then it's get used once by you. Even if you go to a real, you know, like a face-to-face conference, you have two or three people, then that's all who sees it. But if you publish it online, then it has the potential to reach thousands. I know, like, Scott McCloy, that was one of the first things I saw that I was so excited about with the sharing movement. I saw is Shift Matters. You know, that's one of the first things you see when you get connected and you're just inspired by the video. And millions have seen it. And I think, wow, that's phenomenal. He spread his message to millions of people around the world. And for me, I think that's much more powerful than if you don't share.
Right.
One of the things that Todd and Stacy and I encountered before we started our podcast, we had talked about doing the podcast, and we're like, well, are we going to make anyone else mad because there's podcasts already out there? One of the things we encountered were these other people that have podcasts were more than willing to get on, you know, Google Hangout, help us out, and just really, like, push us to go forward. And, like, are you sure you're not going to, we're not stepping on toes? And then they're like, absolutely not. You should, you know, go with it, run with it. And that's just awesome. And that's just education at its best right there.
Now, Shelley, a lot of us at the same time, we still get very nervous when we present, no matter if it's a crowd of 10 or a crowd of 100. Do you ever have that public speaking fear that so many of us have?
One of my biggest fears is doing, I started doing a couple of years ago, they asked me to do Pecha Kuchas, and these are 6 minutes and 40 seconds, and every time to do it, I feel like I'm going to throw up and faint. Like, I just, in the past, they've actually said, they've actually given me a drink to chug, because I'm just like, I'm like overwhelmed with fear, like my stomach aches. There are times when I was, I did a keynote in Brazil, and it was next to one of my, who I absolutely love, he's an incredible speaker, his name is Ken Wilson, and he's my, you know, he's been doing this for years, and he's fantastic, and I had to go, I didn't sleep, I didn't eat, I just couldn't. They said, Shali, you know, it's okay, and I said, no, you know, this is somebody who's so amazing, you know, right. Like, I have to. And so, yes, I do. I get very nervous. But at the end of the day, I tell myself, I get over it, and I say, look, you're nervous because you're concentrating on you. But really, you were kind of, people chose you to deliver this message. They saw something in you. So it's not about you and your nerves or what they see or, you know, how you look or anything like that, or even if you messed up, because I have messed up. what it's about is the message. And if you deliver that message in a way where they see that you believe in it and you just kind of paint it for the audience, then that's what's important. So you have to do the justice to the message. So then I get over it and I tell myself, okay, the message, that's what's important. You just got to deliver that message. You're the messenger. Yeah, deliver the message.
I love that.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good message. tell us a little bit about the free webinars that you do every Friday.
That was actually, and that's one of the things about sharing. So I started doing, then they had me do these prestos. My friend Heike Filt, she's in Belgium now. And she's incredible. One of the top e-learning people there is. She's just very forward-thinking. She does another conference with me, the Virtual Roundtable Conference, which is also a free conference. But it's for language teachers. And she told me when we were starting, she said, I came up with this format. It's not Pecha Kuchas. It's presto. So it's not 6 minutes and 40 seconds. It's 3 minutes and 20 seconds.
Oh,
but
wow.
I need you. It's all online. You have your PowerPoint, and you have you on video. And she says, I need you to help me. I need people to create them so people can understand what it is, and we can have this as kind of like a new method, a new way of having our students, if you're teaching online, because a lot of people do teach online now. And so I said, okay, I'll help you. She coached me. I think we did that thing. It was 3 minutes and 20 seconds, and it probably took 3 hours or 3 days and 20 seconds, because she kept saying, give me more, and no, do this and that. And so I've been very fortunate to have like other people kind of push me and tell me how to do all of these things and just kind of publish these kind of things out there. And I think I kind of lost the question. I forgot what the original question was. What was the question again?
The free webinar is on Friday.
Oh, okay. This is why. Okay, so the one that I had out there, I think it was survival tips for teaching kids or something like this. And then I did a couple because I thought, oh, this is kind of cool. And people really loved it. Oh, it was Twitter. It was connecting online with Twitter. And that thing went crazy. I think like 6,000 people still
wow.
downloaded it.
Really?
And, you know, so I did that. And then somebody contacted me and he said, would you like to work for us? Because we have someone, you know, we want someone to do, every Friday we do these webinars, American Diesel, and they said, I like your videos, so will you, you know, work for us? And 2 years later, I've done over 100 webinars for them, and we do it
wow.
on various topics. Anyone can come every Friday. And that was when it had a condition that I said, okay. And I said, well, as long as it's free, because I like to do things where all types of teachers can access it. I mean, yes, you do have your books and everything like that, of course. But if I can get it, especially if it's training like that, then, and it's not like a full blown course, but it's just webinars, then I like for teachers to have access.
What service do you use to do those webinars?
We use an Adobe Connect platform, which is really good, because Adobe Connect is one of the few platforms out there that actually allows you to use it with a mobile device. So you could go on your Android or you could go on your iPad, and I've had attendees come and attend that way. So
well, and see, there's some webinars I've done with Classroom Champions or Sophia.org, and they use Adobe Connect as well. And I do like the aspect that I can get on my phone. I don't have to pull out a laptop to join the webinar. I can have my phone and my iPad and join it, and I like that. Now, one thing we always ask our guests is about a time in their career where they've made a mistake, or they've fallen flat on their face and were so embarrassed, and something that they took and learned from. Is there a time that you can think of in your career where you were like, oh my gosh, I will never do anything like that again?
Well, I think it was really that time when I didn't collaborate with teachers, like I had said previously. That was definitely one of those moments. And the other moment, which was still stemming back from that time, because that was when I really was a teacher in a school, and before, you get a lot of leniency when it's not so structured, but when it's structured and there's so many rules to follow, you don't. I understand that. So one of the other things that I did that I learned a lot from Wes about parent engagement, and I've learned a lot about that from Larry Filazzo. But at the beginning, because my students, most of their parents were overseas, we had a boarding program, sometimes they would stay with families that were there, and I did do the communication, I did do the emails and everything like that, but I didn't do some of the things like Larry says. Like, for example, Larry Filazzo says one of your first communications should be in the first week and things like that, which I think is very important now, is have communication that's positive. Every single student, it should be positive, because the first time you have a conversation with a parent, of course they're going to be very mean towards you if their child is in trouble, if that's the first communication. And so my first year I had one of the students, and that's what happened. I only contacted the parent really, I mean, even though I did the initial contact where you say, oh, hi, you know, I'm the teacher. I didn't have where I said something positive and very personal and things I celebrated about the kids. And so at the end of the year, I had a parent. I did write during the time that, you know, this person cheated and that kind of situation happened. At the end of the year, I had them come in and yell at me and say, you're an awful teacher. And, wow. You know, the student says that all you do is you sit in the desk all day and you make them do book work. And I knew that wasn't the kind of teacher that I was. And I felt horrified. You know, they went to my director, and I was just horrified. I was horrified. I couldn't even believe that that student would say that, because I thought we had, you know, a big, we have a community in my class. And, you know, I could tell that the student was very shy, and I was just, I learned a lot from that experience, because then after that, there was kind of two things I could, and it went fine. They were like, well, it's a money situation. But so it took care of itself. It was fine. The director was totally understanding, knew that I was good at what I did, and that I just didn't, you know, sit at the desk all day and make a new book work, you know?
Yeah.
But then I learned, because you want to say, the first instinct is to blame the guardian, to say it's their fault. But then I thought about it, and I thought, well, what did I do, you know, that can avoid this, because that's not going to take care of it next year if it happens again or again, right. You know? And so one of the things was that I didn't make that positive communication before. So maybe, because she said, when I said, well, didn't you get the messages, you know, and she said, yes, I did, but, you know, I didn't, you know, and that was one of the things I knew. And then I started learning that, and especially with my young learners, if I'm not the parent's friend at the beginning, then if that parent goes home and says bad things about me, then their kid's not going to be good in my class. They're not going to respect me. So I have to. That first week or month, whatever it takes, even if it takes extra time, even if I have 100 kids, I have to make that, because it's going to make the rest of the year so much better. That student's going to be more respectful and stuff. The parent is going to support policies. They're going to allow me to use technology and things. There's a lot of things that have happened because I have had now that positive relationship established and foundation with parents.
Yeah, that's great advice. So the last thing, we always kind of end on this one, or at least we have the last several episodes, is just something that you're really passionate about right now in education.
One of the things I'm really passionate about is the collaboration and all of the sharing and things like that. But the one of the things I think as well is it is this, and a lot of people don't like the BYOD movement, but the bring your own technology and device. And that's one of the things I've been speaking about a lot, because a lot of times I'm a different kind of teacher trainer. I don't just always stand in front of teachers. A lot of times in different countries, because I travel, I've been to 26 countries now. And so I travel quite a bit. I'll do sometimes tours. And the teachers will say, because in those countries, they don't have a lot of technology and stuff. In fact, sometimes they don't have any technology. And what they do have is that the students can bring in devices. And the students do have the technology. Even if it's really, really poor communities. And I've worked with refugees, and they've had cell phones. The majority of them have had cell phones. Not smartphones, cell phones. But there's so much you can do with it. It's just phenomenal. And a lot of times they'll say, okay, that's great that you're telling us. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're from the U.S. or wherever, and maybe you're used to having things. And so they say, prove it. We're, you know, take over our class. And I'll have to do that. So in Slovenia and Croatia, I went all throughout, and I took over classes of different ages, and I ran a 45-minute lesson. We didn't even prepare the kids. We just said, those of you who have your device, and they did have them, we said, you're going to work in groups, and it worked. They loved
it.
The
really
teachers
neat.
Were so excited. They created commercials in that time. We went through a whole process where they developed, we said, okay, you know, where, you know, the lesson was, you get to develop this app. They haven't invented an app to solve something that's happening for your age groups, like teenagers. So what do teenagers face? You work in groups of four, and then you develop an app, and then you have to come up with a commercial. It has to be 30 seconds or less, because TV time is a lot of money. And the board will see which apps. the kids did these amazing things with their devices. Just, you know, one person in a group of four has to have something that can record a video. And they had an awesome time. They loved it. And the teachers were able to do this. So they were excited to be able to replicate it again, to try this lesson again. This was the first time in these places that the kids ever got to do this. They never got to use their cell phones or anything before. So that's one of the things I'm very excited about. I think a lot of people think, they say, well, you know, not every kid has the same device. They don't. We would have, I think in one place, and when I was in Auguland, they did have one person who had the iPhone 6 or I don't know, it was iPhone 4 or something at the time. I didn't even have it. But that was the only person. But nobody, the kids, they understand these things. They go to school. They wear different sneakers. I think that it sends a worse message if we say nobody can use a device because nobody has the means to afford an iPad. I think that sends a worse message. But I think when you say it doesn't matter if you, you know, don't have an iPad or you have just a regular cell phone or something, you can still create with it. You can still do with what you have. And I think teachers, this is one of the things that you train yourself on every day. You're on your cell phone every single day. You know how to text and create videos and things like that. It's not one of those things like they're throwing an interactive whiteboard at you and you have to figure out. It's something that you know how to use because you use it every day. And the other part about it that I'm really excited about too is that it's also one of these things that they carry with them outside the classroom. So it really gets to show them that they can, now they see it in a different way. Oh, I don't just update Facebook or Instagram. This thing is a learning tool. Like, they can do so much with it. They can be creators and producers. So I'm really excited about that.
Well, Shelley, we wanted to thank you for coming on today. It was great getting to hear your story and share about the things you're getting to do and all that. So thank you for coming with us and giving us the time.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and thank you for everyone who watched.
it was a lot of fun.
Well, and for those of you who are watching and listening, we just want to remind you, you can connect with us on Twitter at EduAllStarsHQ, and we use the hashtag EduAllStars when chatting about the show and everything. Our website is EduAllStars.com, and you can also find us on iTunes, all of our old episodes and guests. This is episode 15, so we have 14 other episodes that you can check out, and just search for EduAllStars as one word on iTunes.
And then we have a couple good guests coming up. Specifically, we have the Secretary of Education, Arnie Duncan, on October 1st, and that's at 1 o'clock during the school day. Central Standard Time, excuse me. Yeah, we're not the left coast or west east coast, so we're in the middle coast. The third coast, I think they call it. We also want to encourage people to subscribe via iTunes and leave a rating and feedback. That really helps out with the standings, and a lot of people get to see the show that may not get to see it otherwise if it's up there on the ratings. So really appreciate you listening. Nice to meet you, Shelley. Really, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.